Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm a little hoarse this evening because I must confess I'm getting over a weekend of partying. I think some of my listeners will remember that I mentioned that I was going to be celebrating my 74th birthday over the past weekend, and it was a blast. So it has left me a little hoarse for the moment, but I'm going to try to make it through because we're touring our beautiful island of Jamaica. I want to welcome our listeners online and also those calling in. And you might not recognize the voice, but it's Margaret Marshall, and welcome to the backyard. As you all know, we're doing our island tour, and it's titled Discover Jamaica One Parish at a Time. And that might be sort of sounding strange to some visitors or some people that do not know a lot about Jamaica. However, a lot of Jamaicans, including myself, do not know a lot about other parishes besides the one perhaps they were born and perhaps their parents was born. So I am just having a great time finding out about all the history of these wonderful parishes that really have some very rich history. So tonight we're talking about Portland. Excuse me. And I see that our board is lighting up, so I'd like to welcome our callers from 631. And to also remember that you must hit 1 on your telephone if you would like to interact with us. Make a comment, ask a question, we'll just plug you in. So let's start with Portland, and I hope I'm not coming through too scratchy. Now, Portland, as listeners that are following us weekly will remember that we started with Kingston, then we went to St. Thomas, which Portland adjoins St. Thomas, so we're going east. And if you remember, we have three counties, and this happens to be, Portland is in the county of Surrey. So for you history people or for young people who are doing any historical things on the island, that might be helpful. But here's another helpful hint. Portland is the seventh largest parish. Now, that might sound strange because Jamaica is just a dot on the map, as a lot of foreigners know, But to us, growing up in Jamaica, especially in the 40s and 50s, I mean, it was a huge, big place that we just visited one little portion, perhaps, if we were lucky. So you're going to find out a couple of things about Portland. And I would like to invite any of our listeners that might have some stories or memories of Portland to share them with us. Because as I do my research on the history of the different places, the different parts of Jamaica, and especially the history of the people themselves, I find how little there is about actual people. And later in the show, I will give you some details that I discovered from Dr. Joy Lumsden's research on historic people all over the island. So let's get back to Portland. Portland, with its capital town, Port Antonio, as a lot of Jamaicans will know, it is located on the northeast coast. And it is north of St. Thomas and east of St. Mary, which will be our next tour stop. We're going to St. Mary next week. So it is considered a rural area of Jamaica, and it's known for its great beaches. Now, I'd just like to mention that my first trip to Port Antonio, I was born in Kingston, born and raised in Kingston. I think I might have gone to Titchfield that we'll talk about. But as an adult, my first visit to that part of the island was on my honeymoon in 1957, when my husband and I took a trip by car, and I stayed in a hotel there for a couple of days. So this particular city brings back fun memories. But I'd like to go a little deeper and tell a little more history about Port Antonio itself that I dug up that hopefully you will find interesting. Excuse me. So if you'll bear with me while I get a drink of water, I'm trying to get over a little hoarseness from all the partying I did over the weekend. Anyway, let me just tell you, Portland formerly became a parish in 1723. Boy, that is before my time. By the order of the Duke of Portland. So if you ever wondered how some of these places get their names, this might sort of give you a little idea. He was then the governor of Jamaica. So that particular parish was named after him. The existing port was to be called Port Antonio, and was slated to become a naval stronghold. To that end, by 1729, the British began to build Fort George on the peninsula, separating the twin east and west harbors, known as the Titchfield Promontory. The fort was intended to protect settlers from attacks by sea. You know, remember, there were a lot of pirates in those days. And from the hills, from the Maroons. So I gather the settlers were the Spaniards or the English people, the English. So actually, the ports were built to protect them from the pirates and, of course, from the Maroons. Now, in 1739, the Maroons signed a peace treaty with the British, and this led to a new period of development in Portland. Settlers started pouring in, accepting the governor's offer to free land and slaves. Many began large-scale sugar cultivations. By 1779, there were 39 large estates with more than 100 cattle pens, as they call them then, and small holdings. So you can see that certain things went on at certain parts of the island, you know, because of the migration and the different things that happened. Now, Portland's fortunes were to take a turn for the better in the 19th century with the development of the banana industry, which I think a lot of modern people mostly know it for its banana. Now, Portland's soil and heavy rain were well suited to to banana cultivation, and almost any size farmer could grow bananas for profit. Bananas are quick-growing crop that can be ready to reap within a year had also another advantage over sugar. It can be harvested throughout the year. Now, growing up, you know, especially during my time, a lot of seniors know that, you know, the banana and sugar was some of the main industries that we had. But I never thought about banana being reaped, harvested, and shipped in a short period of time and being done all year long. So it gave certain advantages to the places that could have that happen. Now, I'm reading from some information that I gathered, of course, so I'm not watching the board. So I'll come back now every now and then to see if anybody wants to chip in here with some information that could be relevant to what we're going over. Now, and I'm calling names because I'm sure that perhaps they're descendants of some of these people, because, you know, a lot of people know how mixed up we are out there. So there was a family called, or a man called Doe Baker, D-O-W, Baker, the man credited with single-handedly jump-starting the banana production. Excuse me. For export on the island. He arrived in Jamaica in 1870. The island was experiencing a decline in sugar production and increased competition from beet sugar. Its protected market was gone. A new crop export was needed. And here comes Baker to the rescue. So Baker turned popular attention to the banana, long regarded as sort of a native food. So now we sort of got a picture of what was happening. And as I read all of this history, it just reminds me how, you know, it, regardless of the culture or regardless of the period, people have always come up with ideas, not only just to survive, but to profit in the midst of a downturn. So I'm throwing that out there because everybody, I think, that's listening in know what kind of climate we're living in right now, downturn. So I can only encourage you, when I research these things, I get so inspired to sort of bring these points out because, you know, regardless of whether it was black, white, rich, poor, there were always periods in history when things were not good. You know, things were bad. But you always read about someone who came up with an idea or thought something through or, you know, persevered at doing something, and it became successful. So I hope you'll be getting some ideas in whatever you do to turn this downturn period into perhaps some upturn for yourself or your community or just people around you. Okay, so back to Portland. Now, Baker, who's this man, owned an 85-ton sailing ship. He decided the market was big enough for him to play a part. His first Jamaican cargo included coconuts, coffee, pimento, bananas, and bamboo, all of which sold quickly after a two-week trip. Baker, not one to let opportunity pass him by, saw the two-way potential of this tropical trade, and he loaded up with flour, pork, cured meat, codfish, herring, boots, shoes, furniture, and textile, and returned to Jamaica. Quick thinking. It was on this second visit that he landed in Port Antonio, where he sold some of his cargo. He used the profit to purchase a cargo of bananas at 25 cents a bunch. He eventually left Port Antonio with some 450 bunches of banana. Baker encouraged Jamaicans to plant banana with the challenge. The first man who has 10 acres of banana will be rich. Baker's Jamaica bananas were then sold in Boston, USA, for $2.50 each. I read that because I wanted all our listeners, especially the young ones, to think how there's always opportunity around us. You know, we just have to keep our eyes open and take advantage of it. So in 1879, Baker became the agent for a newly formed shipping company that enabled him to expand his transportation of bananas. And it was then called the Boston and United Fruit Companies, because, of course, he was trading in Boston. Baker established an office in Port Antonio and began to make an average of 5 trips a year. He formed the Boston Fruit Company by buying out small concerns. Small farmers began to buy and rent land all over the parish to plant bananas. So, you know, one person can really come up with an idea that can help a whole community. He expanded by buying estates in Bog, in Port Antonio, in Bowden, and Port Morant. More ships were building piers. He soon faced increased competition, of course, you know, there's always that. And it went on to say how the company eventually became United Fruit Company, which some of the older Jamaicans perhaps will recognize that name. And by 1902, Baker controlled the entire island's banana trade. St. Mary had also emerged as a major producer of banana. Now, remember now, this is the adjoining parish. And he went on to supply fruit all along the east coast of the United States and later New Orleans, Montreal, and London. Regular exports to Britain had begun in 1901 when Sir Walter Jones' Imperial Direct Steam Line, which included refrigerated machinery, employed to the United Fruit Company and later bought out by them. Some 650 tons of banana were shipped to the UK each month. Now, I didn't even know that there were refrigerated steam lines in 1901. I don't know if a lot of our listeners or some of our listeners perhaps know more about the history of those things that I did, but I was not aware of that. So that's a little history of how the banana trade got started, particularly in that part of the island. Excuse me. And let me just see if any of our listeners here, last week when we were talking about St. Thomas, I talked about the two different kinds of bananas that I was familiar with just from growing up, and I remembered Lacaton and Gross Mitchell. And, excuse me, one of our callers was kind enough to call in and let me know which one was the tender one. I did remember that in my head, that one was considered more tender, you know, when you cook it, than the other. They even have different shapes. So now we know how the banana got there, but you know, how the trade actually started, who started it, and that it was really started in that part of the island. So now I want to talk a little bit about the towns, because I'm sure that some of our callers may be just from that area or maybe from one of these towns. And if you are, I want to hear from you. The known towns, of course, there are lots of little towns, but is Buff Bay, Catterwood Springs, Hope Bay, Nanny Town, Port Antonio, which is the capital, of course, and St. Margaret's Bay. Now, you know, Margaret is my name. I didn't even know there was a St. Margaret's Bay in Port Antonio. That's how much I know about my country. And actually, Port Antonio happens to have a lot of rivers. Portland has 17 rivers, which form a network throughout the parish. The largest are the Rio Grande, which is in Buff Bay, and Hector's River. I remember that very well because as a youngster, I remember going to camp at Titchfield and bathing in Hector's River. I remember that very well. So that's a little history about the towns and the rivers. Now I want to tell you something about anyone out there from Portland, please put up your hands by hitting one on your keypad. I seem to be lavishing alone this afternoon because my co-host had a meeting with her young children. My co-host is a lot younger than me, and she has a very large family, and, you know, it's all sorts of things going on in school now. But she had to attend a parent-teacher meeting. And my number one guest, who likes to talk all the time, from Mr. Nunez from the Bronx, home of the Yankees, is not with us this evening. He called earlier to apologize. He has something to attend. So my board is fully lit up. So I'm going to ask any of our listeners out there that want to join the Labrish, just hit one on your keypad so I can plug you in. So I want to talk a little bit now about the coastline. You know, there are 14 caves in Portland, which include the Buff Bay. It's Buff Bay, Orange Bay, Hope Bay, Port Antonio. These are where all caves are. Boston Bay, Long Bay, Innis Bay, and Nonsuch, Nonsuch. All of those places are known for caves. And and they have 17 rivers. I said, oh, wow, I didn't even know that. So they also have a lot of factories. There are 18 factories manufacturing small manufacturing sector of 18 factories. It doesn't say what they make, but that's interesting because I did not particularly know there were any factories there. Now, Portland, by and large, remains the playground for the wealthy, many of whom own property there. A number of tourist facilities exist, like different villas and hotels. But I think that the older Jamaicans will relate to one famous actor who actually bought the Navy Island. And older Jamaicans know who Errol Flynn is. I know a lot of younger people would say, who? Well, he was a swashbuckler, you know, movie star with the Knights of the Round Table and sword fighting, and of course a hunk of a movie star. And it is said that he visited Jamaica and just fell in love with the place. Well, so he bought an island. Now, not only did he fall in love with the place, but we also have some famous now people that own property there. One is a famous Jamaican, Michael Lee Chin. He's Jamaican-born, Canadian, billionaire. He was born in the parish of Portland and went to Titchfield High School. So if any of you alumni are out there from Titchfield, you know that you have, I don't know if you know Michael, but he is now a billionaire. I think he was in investments or something. There's Rosie Allwood, who was an Olympian who represented Jamaica in 1972 games in the 200-meter dash and also in the 1976 and 1980 games. There's an Edward Ball, writer and lecturer. He resided in Portland and attended the Titchfield High School. And Noel Dexter, renowned microbiologist. He's a musician. He's a composer and director, and he was born in Port Antonio and attended Titchfield High School, where he gained his love for music while also an avid sportsman. Well, with all those rivers and things going on there, you know, I'm sure that perhaps his sports was had something to do with the water. Also, Ronald H. Bell, who's the founder of the Center for Behavioral Change in Indianapolis. He was born in Fruitful Vale. That's the name of a district, a few miles out of Happy Bay. No, I'm sorry, Hope Bay. And I guess I'm still happy. It's Hope Bay that he was born. So there's all these little towns all around Portland that are very interesting. But the interesting thing is that it produced some very intellectual, musical, artistical people that are now mostly expatriates because they're living abroad. Now let's talk about Boston Beach. And I think I remember going on a picnic there. Now, Boston Beach is a coastal community on the north coast of the island of Jamaica with a public beach, which is one of the few beaches in Jamaica attracting surfers, which is important, you know, because it means that the water rises to the level where people can really surf very well. It is located 9 miles east of the town of Port Antonio, so it's a little way out. Excuse me. Now, in 1870, it's saying here, traders from Boston, Massachusetts, began transporting banana from the parish. So, actually, do you know that people were enjoying the waters along there from those days? And it attracted a lot of the wealthy people who could come there, you know, just to enjoy the beach. They didn't. So, in truth and in fact, Portland or Port Antonio was the first tourist town, not Montego Bay. One would think that because Montego Bay is a lot more developed, a lot more popular in today, you know, and ever since I was growing up, you would not think that the tourist trade was actually started in Port Antonio. That is something I did not know. Excuse me. I'm going to just temporarily put some music on while I go get, I take a sip of water. So please bear with me. I'm having a little, I'm having a little dry spell. Just give me a few minutes. Here it comes. Hang in there with me, guys. I see a lot of you, and I need someone to talk to me. This is a labyrinth. I'll be back in a second. Thank you for holding on with me. My throat is a lot better now. Thank you. Anyway, back to our Port Antonio story. You know, as I was researching all of this, I came across the most interesting information from Dr. Joy Lumsden, who I just love to quote. You know, she has she is an English professor who is an English woman who was married to a Jamaican and still resides in Jamaica and is doing wonderful research. And while I was researching Port Antonio, I found that there were so many people that, you know, we don't know anything about that goes back, I mean, native black Jamaicans who go back, way back, who were doing very, very interesting things for the times they were born, and we never heard of them. And one of them I want to talk about this evening, who was actually born in Port Antonio, is the Reverend Ralph O'Neill Taylor, he has seemed to have two names. In November, in 1875, a report of a missionary meeting in Port Antonio on October 26th appeared in the Jamaica Church Chronicle. And, you know, in those days, they wrote in Old English, so sometimes it's a little hard to decipher. But Dr. Lumsden gets her information about people and places from all over. She'll get it from something published in London, a death certificate, an article here, an article there, and sort of piece it together about the lives of these very interesting people. And I am saying that to say that I'm encouraging all our listeners, regardless of your age, and especially those in my age group, to start putting together your own story, because it's hard. Whatever you have done is important to your family, to future generations. And the whole purpose of Backyard Labrish, both this radio show and our actual website, is to help people of the Jamaican culture, especially people in, you know, that are getting older, who might not have a lot of memory about, you know, what happened when they were growing up. We don't think it's important now, but, you know, you never know. In 20, 50, 60 years, it would be maybe interested to one of your descendants. So I'm doing this to help inspire you, encourage you. If you know of some older person who you think have some information, the best place to store your information is not in writings anymore, because I lost a lot of what I wrote or had, books I had, in a fire. I had a house fire. And so I know that the best medium to preserve this is cyberspace, because it will be here long after we're gone. Not only that, it's the only thing that will be used by the future generation. So back to this report now. If you know anyone with this, any of these names, I'm sure they might be connected in some way. But in this report, in the Jamaican Church Chronicle, great interest was manifested when the Reverend Mr. Taylor, a black gentleman from Africa, a native of that place, who was later ordained deacon by the bishop, rose up to speak. He gave the audience interesting accounts of mission work in Africa and other places. The people were highly amused when he spoke in the African tongue. He sang sweetly in it and repeated some prayers. He was brought up in St. Augustine College in Canterbury, where he graduated in the arts. We trust that he will succeed in Jamaica and will act as a stimulus to the black inhabitants to educate their children. We are glad to add that he is quite a gentleman in his manners, as well as a scholar. So this was something that was that Dr. Lumsden got from the Jamaica Church Chronicle, January 11th, 1875. Here's my point. Even then, you had Africans coming to Jamaica through the ministry. And this person was being talked about in Portland, in Port Antonio. This meeting was being held in Port Antonio. I also found some very interesting information about a black minister from Kingston, but it is so juicy and so interesting. I figure that since we did Kingston already, once I travel around the island, I might do something on the history of religion as it relates to the entire island, because older Jamaicans, and I think even perhaps some of the younger Jamaicans, will be amazed about how far back in history there were men and women, a lot of women, doing some great things in education, in charity work, in collecting money for the underprivileged, in coming up with ideas to do things, with discovering things. And then not only did they do it in Jamaica, but they traveled all over other places, you know, mostly London here in the United States, and even Africa, and some to China. And it's amazing that we hardly ever hear about it or about them, at least not when I was growing up and doing history. Or I don't know if it's just because I was not, perhaps not that interested in history at that time of my life as I am now, but I'm telling you, I am like a kid in a china shop when I discover some of this information. And like Dr. Lumsden, you know, once I find one thing, I go here and I find something else and I try to connect the dots. And eventually, I'm not able to do it right now, but eventually everything that is discussed on the radio will be on the website. So you'll really have one place that you can just go. And of course, I must tell all of our listeners that you can always just pick from the shows that you want to listen to online. You know, when you click on the link that I send you if you're on my mailing list, at your convenience while you're at your computer, perhaps doing something else, you can just select a show that might be of interest to you and listen to that show. You can also send the link to that particular show to any of your friends that might share your interest. And with that said, I would like to invite, or first of all, I want to thank you all for listening. I see the board is all lit up. I also want to thank the listeners that are listening online. And I apologize again for my raspy throat, and perhaps I'm not as clear as I should be. But both of my assistants tonight are not with me, and I am trying to interact with you. I see nobody's putting up their hands. But I want to encourage you to, you know, make a difference, leave a footprint, and join the backyard. It's quite safe. We are, you know, it will be people of like minds that will be in the backyard. And I want to remind our listeners that we meet here every Wednesday at 8 to chat about something that we're passionate about. And for the next couple of weeks, we'll be doing an island tour, Discover Jamaica, one parish at a time. And for the Jamaicans listening, you know that we have 14. This is our third parish that we're discussing. And we're talking about beautiful Portland. And for those of you who are familiar with Port Antonio, you know that it's so scenic. Now, an interesting fact that I found out is that, you know, it is still relatively quiet there, and it is still considered the playground of the rich and famous. Because I suppose because it's really a little further from the airport, there's no major airport there. Subsequently, you know, people would have to travel if they landed in Kingston or in Montego Bay. And I suppose travel there between those points is not as popular as just landing in Montego Bay. So there are not as many hotels, but there's some exclusive villas. And I have a feeling that that area will be next to be developed. Now, one thing I noticed as I read through a lot of this, and for you, for the listeners who are interested in history, there's a lot of history if you just try to find it. So if you ever have any questions or want any information, you know, please just send me an email, and I'll be glad to share some of the information with you as to where you can get more detailed information than that we can actually lavish about in one show. But I believe that one of the things with that area is because of the terrain, it gets more, as I mentioned before, it gets more rain, and it is more likely to get hurricane damage. Because I was reading about the Blue Lagoon, which, if any of the listeners have been there, they know how exotic it is. Just the color of the water. I mean, it changes depending on the time of day and the position of the sun, Well, there was, I don't know whether it was a restaurant or a hotel there, but it was destroyed by a hurricane, you know, not too long ago. So the lagoon is actually closed. They say that, you know, you can get close to it, but I suppose the area that people used to dive, it was considered bottomless at one time, but as the equipment for diving became more modern, they did find that it did have a bottom. That's what it was thought to be, bottomless. But it's a wonderful place, I suppose, for divers to dive because it is so deep. But it does change color as the day progresses and as the sun moves. And I cannot remember going there, but I read that it is absolutely breathtaking. Now, I'd like to, if any of our listeners have any information or stories or have been there, I'd like you to hit one on your keyboard so you can talk to me about it and let the rest of the world know. And if you're from that area and have any special information that you'd like to share with us, please feel free. You know, you don't have to tell me where you are or who you are. You can just make up a name. But we'd like to hear your voice. And we really, really would enjoy hearing from you. So please just hit one on your keyboard if you would like to. So back to what I was saying. There are several villas there, and I'm sure that there, if you perhaps look hard enough, you'll find some places that are like bed and breakfast. So I am just encouraging people who are living away from the island and who have not visited for a long time, perhaps instead of going to the well-known places like Montego Bay, you might want to check out what's going on in Port Antonio. I know from what I've read, I definitely want to go back there. I have, you know, some memories of going there when in 1957, and perhaps being there as a kid, you know, on a camp. But other than that, you know, at my age, the memory sort of, not that good. So I just know that just from reading that it sounds so special. And with that, I would like to just let all my listeners know that, you know, during the time I was raising my children and just sort of making life, I did not have time to find anything out about my country that I didn't know. But now I just, there's not enough hours for me to research something and find something out. And I'm just pleasantly surprised at all the wonderful information that I have been finding out. And I want to, again, thank Dr. Joy Lumsden for her passion for history and her love of Jamaica, because she's contributed a lot to the information that people, Jamaicans, really never knew before. If you go to her website, you can just, you know, type her name into Google, and you will find a lot of information on her and a lot of the different areas that she's doing research. And it's a work in progress, because she continues to find new things, and not only that, to update her site. She's also asking if people have information that would be relevant to any of the research that she's doing, she would be more than happy to include it, you know, as long as she can authenticate it. So I'm really passionate about trying to support her in doing that, because I know that generations to come will be grateful for it, because a lot of, say, the landmarks and the historic, not only the information, but the buildings and places are not there anymore. They're not in their natural form because they're destroyed by one thing or another. It could be nature or just lack of care. And I, hopefully, there will be continuity to this backyard lavish idea, because I think one of the things, if you love history and you love your culture and you love Jamaica, one of the things we have to do is preserve the information. And on one of the websites I was reading, she mentioned that wherever she got the information that was printed then, it could not even be copied. She had to copy it by hand. Some of it she could not see. So she sort of figured out what the words were, like a letter from one person to another that mentioned someone that she was researching. With that said, I read also that the library in Jamaica has a lot of information that is so fragile that they cannot even photocopy it. And because, you know, the world economy is in such a mess, funds for places like the library and the historic structures right now are going to be the last thing on especially the government's list. So, you know, you might want to think in terms of what can we do as people who are here, not necessarily right away, but, you know, start thinking of, would you like to help preserve the history of the Jamaican culture? And what can you do? What ideas can you come up with that might be feasible or any idea at all? And I really encourage you to start expanding your mind and start thinking of all the wonderful things. Right now, there's a lot of negativity going on all over the world, but especially in Jamaica, with perhaps some of the current affairs that might not be all that good. But if we just focus on that, then, you know, we it's not going to help anybody or anything. So what we can do is to think about the good parts of our past, you know, what great things we have to celebrate. And that will help to inspire us to think about the present and the future in a more positive light. So with that, I want to thank all my listeners to helping me celebrate the wonderful parish of Portland. And I want to ask you to tune in again next week when we will celebrate St. Mary and talk about some interesting things about that parish, which I have to do my research because I really don't know too much about St. Mary. Boy, I'm going to be so exuberant when I get to my parish, which happens to be Westmore. I'm going around the coast. So, you know, we have to go all the way till we get on the North Coast. We're still east. So I just encourage you, if you have any ideas or want to suggest anything, please send me an email. And if you're not on my list, ask someone who does, or just go to the website and give us a note. I see a raised hand, so I'm going to open up the mic to 718. Just give me a second. 718-798, you're on. Good evening. Welcome to the backyard. Who am I speaking with?
Good evening, Ms.
Marshall.
This is Ms. Pearson. And how are you today?
I'm sorry, I could hardly hear you.
Good evening, Ms. Marshall. This is Roger, Sharon's mother.
Hey there. Good evening. How are you? I'm doing great. Welcome to the backyard.
Thank you.
Now you're from Portland?
Yes, I am.
Oh, well, welcome. We got a native.
Thanks. Unfortunately, there isn't a lot that I really know about Portland because I left there at an early age. So there isn't a lot that I can really add to all your research.
Uh-huh. Was there anything interesting that you didn't know before?
That there were so many caves and so many different rivers.
Right, me too. I was really, that blew me away. I'd heard of Hector's River.
Yes, Hennessy's Bay. Also, I know of Hennessy's Bay.
Right, right.
I knew of Hector's River.
Uh-huh. Did you know of St. Margaret's Bay?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did, yeah. And Hope Bay?
I was trying to think of all the different bays. There was Buff Bay.
Uh-huh.
And there's Hope Bay.
Right.
St. Margaret's Bay.
Yes, that's the tree that's listed here.
There's Long Bay.
Oh, really?
And there's Manchineel Bay.
Oh, yeah, Manchineel is mentioned here, but it's not mentioned as a bay.
Yeah, so, I guess years ago.
Yeah.
It was a bay, but they might have dropped the bay.
Uh-huh.
From it, but it was Manchineel Bay. Manchineel Bay. I spoke to two teachers, and this is what they said. It was Manchineel Bay.
Oh, interesting. Now I just came across something else. 20 Leagues Under the Sea by the Walt Disney movie.
Yes.
Did you know it was filmed there in 1954?
No, that I did not know.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm just reading that now. And two of the most popular 20th century movies, which was 20 Leagues Under the Sea by Walt Disney and The Harder They Come,
yes,
by Vista Productions in 1972.
Yes, The Harder They Come, I knew that that was filmed there in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
20 Leagues Under the Sea, I did not know about that one.
Right. Well, also, Cocktail, starring Tom Cruise, was shot in the bar at the beach at Dragon Bay. That's one bay that we didn't call Dragon Bay Resort.
Okay, that I did not know. And
that
bay is also in the parish of Portland?
Apparently so, yes, because this is all about Portland. All of this is about Portland.
Okay.
And there's the film edition of The Lord of the Flies was shot at Frenchman's Cove.
Yes, well, that definitely I heard of Frenchman's Cove.
Right. So
that's in Port Antonio area.
Right, right. So it's sort of still as it is today, mostly exclusive for, you know, the filmmakers and the people who perhaps like to be secluded and be at a quiet place.
Yes.
It's still not as developed as Montego Bay. But I did not know before I did my research that that's where tourism started.
In Port Antonio.
Right. Because not the other side of the island as it is now, because of the trading. And what really started it was the bananas.
Yes, yes.
So because the people used to come on those boats or their private yachts or whatever they owned. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like so, Errol Flynn.
Pardon?
Like Errol Flynn.
Right, right, right.
Yes.
So it's really quite interesting. So I expect to hopefully get some juicy information about St. Mary for next week.
Yes.
And I want to ask my listeners that are online, if you know of someone from St. Mary, please ask them to tune in because, you know, they might just be able to interact and give us some information or they might just enjoy the show. So, again, I want to just thank you and thank you so much for joining the Labrish with me.
Thank you for bringing it to us.
Oh, you are most welcome. I get so much joy from doing this show and just joy from finding out all these things.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, it will be important to the future generation because so much is changing. And as people get, you know, busier in their lives, there comes a time when they're not so busy and they want to know. And this kind of information will be preserved, you know, because once it's in cyberspace, this is unlike a regular radio show. Because a regular radio show, once the broadcast is over, it's over.
Yeah.
Unless you have a tape of it. With Blog Talk Radio, of which Backyard Labrish is just a small part, it will be there forever. You could go and listen to a show that was done last year.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because you just click on that show and you listen to that particular show. So my point is that the shows will always be online. Cyberspace is endless, you know? So I am just so excited about being able to use this platform to talk about our culture and to inspire some people, you know, to get information or to be happy about things about our past, about our country,
and how we grew up and where we came from. Because,
yes,
you know, that helps to strengthen us to even go through more difficult times in our lives.
Yes.
The more time we spend with celebrating and talking about good things, it helps us when we have challenges. Don't you agree?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so that's what we need to do once a week at 8 o'clock with Backyard Lavish on Blog Talk Radio. So to all my listeners, and especially to you, darling, I thank you for your support, and I look forward to hearing you again next week.
God's willing.
All right, dear. Good night, and say good night to your beautiful daughter for me.
I certainly will.
And to my loyal listeners, I want to say again, this is Margaret Marshall. You're listening to Backyard Lavish, and we ask you to come back next week, pull out your easy chair, and feel those wonderful trade winds blow across your face as we talk about Saint Mary. So do visit us at www.backyardlavish.com. And Jamaicans know how to spell a lavish, right?
I'm sure
they do. L-A-B-R-I-S-H for our non-Jamaican friends. And what it means is to get together and talk. So that's what we do here once a week on a Wednesday at 8 p.m. So join us next week, and I hope that my throat will be in better condition, and my co-host will be here, and our board was full of listeners, but I only have one brave person willing to lavish with me. So please say good night. Tell our audience who you are again so they can remember your name, that you're a loyal listener.
The name is Ralder.
Ralder.
Yes.
Okay, folks, Ralder and Margaret is saying good night.
Night.
Good night. Okay, Ralder, talk to you next week. Have a wonderful week.
And you do the same. I thank you.
Thank you, dear. And God bless all my listeners.
Likewise.
Stay safe and tune in again next week. We love you and appreciate you. Good night.
You will.